Welcome to The Mountain Life. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
Every January, many adults set goals and make New Year's resolutions to harness that fresh start energy and improve their lives. But what about kids?
Teens and tweens may have the time and energy to explore interests or pursue personal goals, but they don't always know what those goals might be. So how can we help young people figure out what they might like to cultivate in their lives and how to stay motivated through the process?
Our next guest, Dr. Ellen Broughton, is a foremost expert in the field of pediatric neuropsychological assessment. She's an associate professor of psychology at Harvard Medical School and has co-written a new book called The Motivation Mindset Workbook, helping teens and tweens discover what they love to do. It offers practical tools, suggestions, ideas, and activities to help kids discover what makes them thrive and how to get off their phones and engage more deeply with life and others. Dr. Ellen Broughton, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks. Well, motivation is a term most of us use on a pretty frequent basis, but what is your working definition in the context of this new workbook?
So I think the very simplest way to describe motivation, it's why we do the things we do. So it's the reason why we do the things that we do. And it, you know, motivation can take a lot of different, we can look at it in a lot of different ways and a lot of different components to motivation, but it's the why. It's why we get up in the morning, why we go to school, why we gravitate towards certain activities. So that's the simplest definition.
That's super helpful. Perfect. And your book, the workbook, and the companion book that has a lot of more fleshed out conceptual stuff was called
Bright Kids Who Couldn't Care Less, How to Rekindle Your Child's Motivation. That really, like you said, it's a lot more conceptual. It's a lot more about what is motivation? What are the components of it? How do we get somebody motivated? And then it was like, you know, for parents, that's great. But a lot of them are like, well, what do I do now? What do I do? Which is why we wrote the workbook, is because we really wanted to get a sense of like, we want to give people sort of real life kinds of activities that they could do to kind of reach their child, or even as teachers to reach the students in their classrooms.
Tell us how kids and their approach to motivation or a growth mindset is different from adults when it comes to motivation.
Well, I think, you know, in some ways it's not all that different because, you know, we lose as adults, motivation is something we have to work with our entire lives because we are motivated to do a certain activity or we get a new job or a new project and we're really into it. And then we're not. Because motivation is a sort of thing that we have to, you know, it's I think we describe it, you know, I describe it in both of the books as being a fire. The fire needs oxygen, it needs, you know, fuel. And so motivation is one of those things that we have to keep tending. So in a way, adults have a little bit of a benefit in looking at this difference between adults and kids. We do have the benefit of knowing ourselves better. And I talk about how to get motivated, one of the prime components is to know who you are. You know, we put it under this umbrella of aptitudes, like what are our aptitudes? But adults really should kind of know that already. So they've got a little bit more of a head start on that. But you know, that's not necessarily the case. Like sometimes we're stuck in jobs that we don't love, that aren't in sync with our aptitudes, which is why we're unmotivated in that job. So I think one of the things to think about as you're thinking about motivation is, what am I good at? Like, what are my natural gifts? Because we tend to be more motivated when we're using the gifts that we have as opposed to not. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't be motivated to do something we're not good at. There are theories of personality that kind of look at that. Like, you know, this Adler is a psychologist who has this idea of striving for superiority, that for sometimes we're very motivated to do things that are hard for us, but that's okay. It's still coming from a place of, I know what I'm good at and I know I know this is hard for me, but I want to do it anyway. So, and I'd say that kids are much more apt to do that sort of thing than adults generally are, because again, we kind of know that's going to be really hard and I know exactly how hard it's going to be. Whereas kids are oftentimes ready to plunge into something because they don't know how difficult it's going to be.
Dr. Broughton, I'm wondering, you know, as adults, as you've been talking about, it makes me think about how adults have these things that they are motivated to do, but we all have difficulty at times motivating ourselves to do the things that we're motivated to do, which is a funny way of saying it. But, you know, like I love to ride my mountain bike, but a lot of days it takes me so much to talk myself into getting out there. What are some of the things that we can help kids tell themselves or ask themselves about the things that they are motivated to do, but may have just a hard time getting there?
So the three areas that I identified as being important for motivation are what we call aptitude, which I talked about already, practice, and pleasure. And so each one of those things are really important in understanding why we're motivated or not as motivated. So we talked about aptitude, that, you know, we need to know, like, who am I? And because that's a place where we need to start. And then practice is, what are the sorts of things we like to do and enjoy doing, even when no one's pestering us to do it? And then what are the sorts of things that give us pleasure? And so you described the mountain bike riding. I'm sure it gives you pleasure. I'm sure that it's one of those things that you like to practice, for example, and something you're good at. So that's something you're motivated to do. And so when we're thinking about motivation, we want to make sure, when we're thinking about kids, that we are kind of in the center. If you think of those three things as a Venn diagram, that motivation is really at the center of that. Now, I'm going to use your mountain bike example here, that that you're probably pretty motivated to do that. But what gets in your way? So it's not just about sort of staying in that zone, but also looking at the other things that get in your way and eat up motivation. So probably you're not really, you know, it could be that you're not motivated to get out there because you're so stressed and you've got so much else to do and you don't have enough time. It might be because you didn't sleep well the night before and you're kind of tired. So all of those things are kind of motivation killers. So it's not just about, I found it, I know what I want to do. It's also looking at the environment that we're in and the kinds of things that are sort of motivation killers, which is one of the things that we, you know, that we address in this book, is kind of like taking inventory, taking stock. Am I really motivated to write my next book? Sure, but if I don't have any time to do it, I'm not really going to be motivated enough to do it. And so that's, you know, that we've got to look at both of those things at the same time. So if you're kind of like, I know I want to do this, but I'm not doing it, then you've got to look outside of yourself.
Mm-hmm. What for teens is a motivation killer, and how can we fix it when it comes to peer pressure, for example? I see that as being a motivation killer for something that we might like to do that our peers don't necessarily like to do.
That's a very good point. I thought when you started the question, the two things that always come up, which are two that I already mentioned, is lack of time, feeling too stressed, too overwhelmed. And, you know, when we're overwhelmed, we don't seek pleasure usually. We pick up the phone and start to scroll. But what you're talking about is something a little bit different. You're really talking about when we want to do something that is not okay with the rest of the group. I'm wondering if you have anything in mind, like, is there a particular activity you're wondering about?
Well, I will say that your book, reading through it, made me think about when I was in eighth grade science class. I loved it, but, you know, it wasn't cool to really love science.
Yeah.
And so I remember transferring out of this class. And for me, it was a real turning point and not a great one. It took me a long time to get back to my love of science after that. So maybe that's an example you can use.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great example. Sad, though. But I think that is something, you know, we don't always look at that. Like, why are you not, like, you're so good at this, why are you not doing it? And so it's funny because I think today the nerdiness kind of thing is kind of in now in a way, but there's always something that we haven't yet thought of that kids are not doing because it's not cool anymore. So I think, you know, if we're thinking about an example like that, one of the things we want to do if we're an adult in a child's life is to ask a lot of questions and encourage them to do that. And then also go, you know, if I had a child like that, like you're talking about here, that clearly they love science, the teacher is great. I'd always want to check out, is the teacher not great? Who's in the classroom? Who's pulling them in that direction? I'd want to like have some real clear discussions about them, well, with them about, well, what are you going to do instead? Like, why are you dropping out and what are you doing instead? And sometimes even asking the question, like, why are you dropping out is way too to the point for an adolescent or a preteen. But asking, like, what do you like about it? What do you plan to do instead of doing this? What I see in you, and that's what some of the activities in the workbook are. When I see you, I see this in you. I see joy, or I see, you know, there are different ways of kind of like interviewing the people in your life to get a sense of what is motivating to you. I'm so curious, was there a particular person in your life that made you think you needed to not do it?
Probably, or it was probably more like a couple of people. I think it was a very small peer group thing. And it wasn't in my, I don't know how it was when both of you were growing up, but at that point, it wasn't cool to be nerdy. And I love so much that it's cool now to be nerdy.
But it is, but you know what? That just means that there's something else that's not cool, because this is part of this age in development, is to figure out what is the good stuff and what's the not good stuff, and what do I feel comfortable in and what do I not. And like one school may, that may be very cool, and other schools it may not be. So I, you know, we can't quite generalize in that way. And one group of kids, one cohort of kids in a particular school might be a certain way, and you feel like you need to measure up. But I think talking to kids about who they are, and even, you know, I've worked with kids like that who have dropped out of something because of peer pressure or it wasn't the right thing. But knowing that and doing that with a clear eye for who you are is very different than sort of dropping out and then having to sort of rediscover it. You know,
Sure.
it's not the end of the world to drop out of science in eighth grade. If you reconnect with it in 10th grade, it is a tragedy when you don't connect with it until you're like, you know, 30. That can be very sad.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's talk for a moment about the parents' or caregivers' roles in motivation. And in your book, you encourage parents to analyze their own expectations and to reflect on their child's unique qualities. But it made me think a lot about when there might be mismatches between what the adult might want a kid to pursue and what the child, him or herself, is interested in doing. How much of supporting a child's motivation is just not being over-involved with the stuff that they want to pursue?
It's huge. And I find that the opposite is true too, that when you have a parent who has an agenda, the opposite can, you can demotivate a child by really feeling like I'm giving them every opportunity to do what I want them to do and not necessarily what they want to do. So I think the parent's role is huge. And so you've got to constantly be thinking about, is this something that's important to me versus is this something that's important to my child? And so really kind of analyzing that is clear. You want to make sure that you're not like wanting your child to fulfill the sorts of things you didn't get to do. And it's like I said, it's really huge. And then I find that there are oftentimes kids who just want to do something a little different. So they want to be in the chess club, or they want to be in the drama team, or they want to be the artist. And even if they're good at hockey, they just don't want to do hockey. And so being able to have those discussions and being able to kind of like love the child you have, not the child you wish you had or the child you want them to be, but the child who's right there in front of you saying, like, I really want to do this. And that's where really, I see that adolescents and pre-adolescents can go off the rails is when they get into that age where the parents are like, but this is what I want you to do. This is the kind of activity that I want you to excel in. And that's where it's looking at not just the aptitude. So a child may have an aptitude for, I'll stay with hockey for a minute, but they don't get pleasure from hockey. And that's why we've got to look at each one of these. Just because a child's good at something doesn't mean that that's giving them pleasure, and they're eventually not going to be very motivated to do it.
Sure. And one of the things we see, or at least that I've seen here in town, is we have a lot of people in Park City who have a lot of means, and maybe they retired early, they're wealthy, and their child shows interest in something, and they immediately flood the child with opportunity. They get them the best guitar, a $3,000 guitar, and the best teacher, and the best opportunities. And then I see these kids shut down because that pressure is so intense. At the same time, you don't want to ignore your potential to provide support for your kid. How do we find that balance between giving them just enough?
Oh, that's such a great question. Because most of the time, we are motivated to do things that people aren't just handing us. So, most of the things, if you look at the things that you were really interested in as a kid, a lot of them were things that you picked up in your free time, especially when I was a kid, because we didn't have all that access here. Maybe you got piano lessons or you got some music lessons, but even then, it was oftentimes at the school. You wanted to play trombone, you signed up for a band at school.
Or it was the little neighbor lady, who's given lessons.
Exactly. You walked over to the church organist, and that's who taught you piano. And so it was very different. And your parents did not like, oftentimes you need to practice this much or you need to do this, sort of like you were kind of on your own. You became motivated to do the things you wanted to do. So I think your question is a really good one. And I think it should be driven by what the child is doing and showing. And so sort of like, the good enough kind of approach to this, like, okay, this teacher is good enough for now, or this the time that we're spending on this or the money we're spending on this is good enough. It's not great until they really show that they really want this. When we look at the research on people who are really gifted in their fields, whether it's somebody like a cellist like Yo-Yo Ma or a professional basketball player, what we find is that they did not spend that much time doing those things when they were younger. They were much more well-rounded than we think. And what they did was when they did practice, they were very intense and they were very focused when they did. But it was much more a practice of that was consuming, but not a lot. So it's not until a child sort of notches up and shows that, they're really, when the teacher starts saying to you, the piano teacher, like they're really, I've kind of taught them all I can kind of teach them. They really need somebody good. That's when, as a parent, you really should be saying, oh, this might be a time for us to move things up. Or the same thing on the field hockey team or something, when a coach says to you, they really should be playing on a more, I don't know, a bigger kind of team or more, you know the word I'm trying to look for, more, but that's when we really need to look at that. I think to start with, we really should not start with, we need the best guitar, we need the best teacher. It just doesn't pay off.
That's such a good point. And it may end up feeling like pressure to the kids that
Exactly.
all this money is being spent and all of this equipment may not equal their aptitude and skill at that point in time.
Oh,
Just
but it's a natural thing for parents want to do. Absolutely. I'm a parent too. When my kids were younger, I did the same sort of thing. And so, you like piano a little bit more, like, let's get you teacher, let's find, like, instead of like, maybe, give them a little time to sort of putter around on it before we just dive into everything that needs to be done. And I do find, with my own kids and with the kids I've worked with, the ones that are sort of like, kind of like, no, I really want this. I really, really want this, are the ones that sort of stay motivated in that area as opposed to, not. At the same time, we do need to listen for our child though, when they do say, I kind of like this. So it's this hard kind of choice between like listening for what they might like and encouraging that and giving them the sort of like the play space to do it, as opposed to they say they might like something and now we're just going to dive into it.
Yeah. I have to maybe explore that a little bit more because our son, who ended up going to college and ski racing at college when he was about, I don't know, 9, 8, something like that, he wanted to start ski racing. And we thought that it was just because his best friend wanted to ski race. And we weren't sure that we were on board with what we knew this sport was going to cost. And so we had him pay for, he had to raise money and pay for like half of the program or something that first year. And to make sure that he really wanted to do it. And he did it. And later on, I thought, oh my goodness, what if, because ski racing became such a part of his life, what if we had, you know, had him pay for it? And he said, well, you know, I don't want to. Like the change in the path, his path of his whole life would have been really different. And so I guess the question ends up being, how do we know? How do we read our kids on to, because I know every parent goes through this. How much do I give them and how much do I make them work for it?
You know, you gave such a beautiful example of this where that, I mean, that's just perfect. That, you know, having a little skin in the game is really important. And so that's where, you know, when we were talking before about like, how do you know, like give them the best equipment, the best teachers, but being able to say, listen, this sounds like something you really want. Why don't you show me how much you want this by giving something in? And we do know about motivation that when we do have some skin in the game, we're much more apt to be motivated, or at the same time to say, wait a minute, I don't like this as much as I thought I did. And that's still an important life lesson. And that it could have gone that way for your son. And that's okay too. He would have found something else, but he would have found out something about himself too. But you know, the thing is, you like, he was motivated enough to do that on his own, which probably increased his motivation because he did that. Do you know what I mean? So when you like, it's like, no, I'm gonna really try this, then you're even more motivated to stay in it when it gets hard.
Yeah, there's some confirmation bias going on too. You know, once you're committed and you've done that work, you want to believe it was worth it, right?
Right, well, right.
I was thinking a little bit about how in the strength section, one question asked how a child's strength and personality match the other people, especially adults in their lives. And it made me think like, what do kids do if they're drawn to art and they're in a family full of lawyers, or they like to just read in a house full of vigorous athletes? How can we help them if that's not our natural go-to for motivation?
Well, I think it's one of the reasons why I think parents should be looking at their own strengths when we're talking about their motivation, their child, like, what about your own motivation and who are you? And so I think just being aware of what you just said is 90% of it, 80% of it is like, wait a minute, I've got a child here who like is a bookworm and we are like sporty as can be. And so what does that mean? And in a lot of cases, in a lot of families, let's just use that example. Like you've got kind of an introverted reader, writer kind of kid, and everybody else is super sporty. You can really develop a idea about yourself that there's something wrong with you.
And that may or may not be a very personal and true example.
I can relate in some ways to that too. Like, you know, the child who's there reading is actually actively doing something and going to grow up using words for ways of you know, informing the public and doing all sorts of things. So I do think that being aware of that and looking at your child as something that adds to the family as opposed to is an outlier to the family. And that takes some work on the part of the parent to be able to say, listen, you know, we do love skiing or whatever, but we're so glad that you're part of this family, that you can bring this to us, but having them incorporate that into the family, not like, oh, there she is reading again, which can happen in certain families, or playing the piano or whatever it is, but instead to really say that, you add something to our family. You make our family much richer as opposed to you don't quite belong here. And that is, again, it's a process. It's not a one-time thing. It's sort of like rethinking who are we and what can we learn from those who we love?
Right. Well, I'm shocked that we are almost out of time. There are so many valuable things in this book. The book is called The Motivation Mindset Workbook, and the companion book is Bright Kids Who Couldn't Care Less by author Ellen Broughton. I think the one part that really made me think a lot was the different theories of motivation, talking about instinct, incentive, drive, arousal theory. And the arousal theory was not on my radar, and it's very much something in my makeup where people don't want to be too bored, but you don't want to be too overstimulated or stressed. And so part of the reason we act is to regulate our feelings and our senses. And it never occurred to me. And I look at today's kids and I think they're picking up their phone for a reason. Those little dopamine hits are giving them something that makes them feel something they want to feel. And so how can we help them find that thing? They can still use it occasionally, but how can we help them find that thing IRL?
Right, exactly. And I also think from that too, is sometimes they pick up the phone, not even to get the hits, but because they're so overwhelmed that they don't know. And I guess they're still getting something from that. But you know, oftentimes we pick up the phone when we're like, I've got so much to do right now.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden you find yourself like, whatever, scrolling through the news or the Instagram feed or whatever it is. And you wind up being completely unmotivated. Now you've got work to do and you haven't done it. And you have wasted 30 minutes scrolling through, you know, cat videos or whatever. So it's, so I think that's right. I think that setting limits on some of those other things, we haven't really talked about that, but setting limits on those outside distractions is really important, whether it's sleep, whether it's time management, whether it's the phone, really important. Those are things that suck the motivation out of us.
What I loved about this workbook is that it's not just doom and gloom about our generations going to hell in a handbasket because they're on their phones. It was giving really concrete strategies and quizzes and little graphics and fun ways for kids and teachers and parents and coaches and theater directors and whoever is working with young people. I just really can't recommend this highly enough. Dr. Bratton, thank you so much for being with us on The Mountain Life. I think this is really going to be something that can help a lot of kids and a lot of families.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Ellen.